This is Speaking of Events, the podcast for event industry leaders. We bring together innovators, strategic rock stars, and visionary creatives to talk all about events, industry trends, and anything in between. And speaking of events, here is your host, Carrie Garbus.
I did a children's theater tour. When you say those words to another actor and they say, "So have I," back to you, you immediately have a bond. You immediately have common ground that typically involves a past with a lot of hours spent riding in a van, usually with like set pieces hanging out the back. And I have found that in today's guest. Now, whether he'll actually talk about his children's theater experience, maybe a little.
It's not hard to convince me to do that.
So. Okay. We'll see. It's up to him, but you are in for a treat no matter what happens during today's episode of Speaking of Events. And I can tell you what's not going to happen. I know for sure there's not going to be a lot of silence. So don't worry about that. So maybe Kevin, we should take a breath just to give the audience a little air just to start. What do you think?
I that's probably a good idea. Yes.
Yeah. It's okay. We're all going to breathe, gather strength, and then we're going to go. Well, I am pleased to introduce to you today on Speaking of Events, none other than Kevin Cobb, who is the director of experiential marketing at Agio. Welcome, Kevin. Thank you so much. I'm particularly delighted to have you here today.
Well, thanks for having me on. I'm very, very excited about this. Being able to talk about events for just a little bit, but also being able to talk with someone who also shares a passion for the theater and for all things good storytelling, which will probably come up a time or two in this discussion as well. So thanks for having me.
You are very welcome. I hope we get lots and lots and lots of good stories. And how I like to start all episodes of Speaking of Events is asking my fine guests, what is the one thing you wished people knew about events or wished more people knew about events?
I would definitely approach that answer with the idea that it's not just a moment of time, that it's not just about that one day or one series of days where you have to deliver a message, that the audience wants more, that your need to deliver on expectations, it extends before, certainly during, but then also after. And that if you kind of just show up, you're one and done, sure, you're tired, but your audience just got energized. So if you show up and then just sort of walk away and like, whoo, I don't want to think about that for another year, you're missing a huge opportunity, which is to continue to build year after year on what you've done in that time where you've brought everybody together and you've energized them. Your event should be pouring gasoline on what your strategy is the whole rest of the year. And so, I really wish that more people thought about it like that and then strategized like that as well. I think everybody, including those putting on the event and those attending, would really sort of walk away with a much higher value.
Yes. So it's like the event is only part of the event that is the event, for lack of a better word.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so you think differently too. So when you think about the experience, the time when you're bringing everybody together, and one of the things at Agio that we always ask when we're approaching events is, what can you only do while you're together? And that, I think, shapes, what's happening at the event, but begins to this thought process of, so then there are things that we do before. There's the things that we can only do when we're together. And then there's the things that we can do after. So I think it allows you the permission to make the event excel at the things that it's really good at, which is energizing people, which is what happens when you have a speaker on stage that embraces the audience and brings them in and allows them to be a part of the information that they're delivering. And then some of the stuff that maybe you're like, well, we really need to do these things. You do, but do you need to do it when you're all together? And so when you start to think about it as a full-time or as an ongoing strategy, it really does allow you to focus in on what can we only do when we're together and to be really great at that.
Wow, that is, I hadn't thought about it that way. And that is smart and also comes into my brain of, okay, logistically, how do you do that? You're not just doing one event a year. You're not supporting one experience. How do you magically make that happen for multiple events?
I think it's really focusing in on the communication strategy around it, but just expanding it. Allowing, I think, some breathing room for your audience to say, we want to keep talking about this. And just sort of thinking ahead of time of like, if suddenly we had a portion or a piece of this that could and needed to extend, what would we do? Now, in many ways, we all went through something very difficult in the pandemic. But we also saw this acceleration in opportunity to expand the conversations in a way that maybe previously we wouldn't have approached. And that could be, putting people in a community together, and that's a platform-based approach, or using virtual, which is like, we can jump on and we can face-to-face, even though we're in different geography, talk and extend some of the conversation that is maybe started in that room. And so I think thinking about your virtual approach as a strategy, thinking about community or platform or ways that you can just group these folks together. There's so many technologies now that can do it that are approachable. If you give the space ahead of time to say, we're gonna set this up because I do believe that some of this is gonna happen. If we're doing our job right and engaging and exciting the audience, I think there's gonna be an opportunity to do that. So then when we come back next year, it's another continuation. We're walking up the steps instead of running around the track. And that just feels more intentional.
Yes. And so you touched on it, but what I wanted to also ask was about the last 2 years, which was a lot of things. And what were some, and you mentioned some, but what were some of the things what were some of the gifts? What were some of the things that you learned in the past 2 years?
Oh, absolutely. I think one of them is that if you take a strategic approach to events and to presenting content and telling stories and delivering information, that translates. Whether you're live in that ballroom or whether you're talking face-to-face on a screen or however it is that you need to sort of deliver, if the strategy and the audience comes first, it translates. I think we all had theories that would be the case. And then again, so the opportunity, which is how we like to see it, to really test that and grow that and rapidly evolve, it happened over the last 2 years. And that stood true. And that was, I think, very exciting to see as well. It's like, the skills and the strategic approach, it translates. Yes. And then, I think the idea of, global breaking down of walls because of the addition of virtual, which is still how we talk to our clients about it, which is still how we approach the idea of events, which is like, what's the strategy? Because there are places where 100% you should be in that ballroom, or you should be in that space together, executing, planning, building, solving problems. Sometimes it's just easier or even more effective to be on a virtual and jump in. And share information, make it something that can be really exciting, but a moment in time and a continuation. And sometimes it's a blending of two. We could spend an entire podcast just talking about hybrid if we wanted to and what makes that truly work. Spoiler alert, it's not just setting up a camera in the back room. But using the full toolbox that now everyone was sort of forced to embrace and to find out, it's okay. It's okay to do virtual. It's okay to be hybrid. Just approach it as a strategy. Think of them all as levers you can pull to really achieve your goals.
So what does hybrid mean to you? It is the word of the year, or the past 2 years, perhaps, with event professionals. What does it mean to you?
To me, when I think about hybrid, and I think as we approach, you know, our clients about hybrid too, there's an excitement to that because you no longer have to exclude pieces of your audience that sometimes in the past you've had no choice. So, you know, when you think about, I think about like even the small business or the medium business or entrepreneurs or, you know, these folks that just, you know, are scheduled to the edge of their death and their livelihoods depend on it. Being able to leave and go to a conference and learn and connect sometimes just wasn't a reality. Or if you're an association and you want to teach the latest in care technology, but half of your people that are a member of your association are in Europe, they're probably not going to be able to just pick up and fly to Boston every single year. Well, now you can begin to break those walls down a little bit. And so the excitement of hybrid is no longer having to have the limitations that sometimes can come with only being in person, and to weave the idea of the people in person, the people who are scattered around, but all of them having an experience that is intentional and effective and that engages them and delivers what they need out of it as well. So, you know, for us, I think when we think about hybrid, it's actually a breaking down of limitations and an opening up of even more inclusion, if that is something that is right for that particular experience.
Yes. What I found exciting about the past years was the accessibility of events and experiences for everybody, despite any sort of limitation happening. And that to me was exciting. And so with that, so no matter how your attendees, if you will, your audience is experiencing the event, with all that going on, and especially now that we're coming back to in-person and executing hybrid stuff, how do we still make, not we, because it's not my gig, it's yours. How do you, your organization, how do you make those massive events with all those components truly audience-centric? How does that work?
The first, and it seems like the most obvious thing in the world, but obviously, the most obvious is the one that a lot of times is overlooked, which is including your audience. So thinking about including your audience from square one, and that solves a plethora of things. One of the first one is, you know, one of the things we've been saying quite a bit is you no longer have permission to be boring. And again, you're like, well, we never had permission to be boring. Well, how many events did you go to where it was just sort of stand and deliver and you were being talked at? With the advent of virtual, where all of us had email and Pinterest, I'm showing age, don't tell me, Instagram, you know, TikTok, all these things, click away. If suddenly what you were delivering as a speaker or even a panel or that, it was boring, we had a number of options that we just sort of clicked away, which, you know, I know we were talking a little bit about children's theater earlier. And I said, one of my favorite things about performing in children's theater was they are the most honest audience. So if you come up and you crack a joke and it wasn't funny, they're going to go, that wasn't funny. And you're like, okay, real-time feedback, love it. And so you move and adjust and engage them in a new way that brings them back in. Well, you can't be boring anymore now because the distractions, even being able to get in a conversation. So if you and I were attending this same virtual event and maybe the speaker wasn't terribly engaging, didn't think about audience participation or engaging them as a part of what they wanted to plan for from stage one, you and I might begin a conversation that would completely engross us in the chat. And then, you know, we've lost the ability to, or the speakers lost the ability to engage us and to draw us into the message that they want to deliver or the information or whatever it be that they're wanting to give us. So, you know, I think that thinking about the audience from square one and then planning specific customer journeys for each of those audiences. And I think that's a piece that is often missed because there's a familiarity in events. We all know how to do the in-person, you know, it's warm and fuzzy and comfortable, and we can just nail that day in, day out. The virtual was a little scary for a lot of folks, and man, it came out of nowhere. Technology is unpredictable, and you know, all of those things. So, you know, there's a gravitation, I think, towards just really taking care of that in-person audience, and then, you know, that virtual crew is just watching online. You can't really do that to really nail hybrid. And that's, you know, what I said just a little bit ago, a bit facetiously, but nonetheless, I think it is true, which is you can't just set up a camera in the back of the room and go, that's a virtual audience. Hey guys, hope that your computer's running. So planning a customer journey for both of those, and that includes individual experiences for those who are only in the room, who are only online, and then really intentional intersection points of those. Allow them to intersect with one another. Bring your virtual audience onto stage and let them be in the room with you. Plan for that. You know, find ways where they're just networking with one another, and then when maybe they're connecting with people in the room, because those conversations could be very, very valuable. And so I think this idea of the customer journey for both audiences that have individual and intersecting points. In fact, we have an approach for this that we use at Osio. It's called our DNA. It's our hybrid DNA. And it does look like a DNA strand where you have these journeys that are both individual and that weave together. And we found it to be a very effective way to plan for hybrid, which is not easy because you are truly planning two different events and then you're weaving them together.
Yes, that is really cool. And is it, can you do it simultaneously? Sure, we can have two different events or two different audience journeys. Can they happen at the same time?
Absolutely. In fact, the most effective hybrids, they are happening at the same time. And that's when they're consuming the exact same content at the same time in places. Yes. But they're maybe interacting with it a little bit differently. They have representation. You know, one of the small things that we discovered early on in one of the very first hybrids that we had put on, you know, we specifically put an executive who was only online with the virtual audience at the same time that there were content happening on stage as well. And so this idea of audience interaction then happened, same content, questions and answers, the ability to interact directly with an executive, which was an important part of this event, was intentionally designed for both audiences. And it worked really, really well. And that sort of that small approach of like, you had a specifically identified person who you said was important to your audience that was available in your format that you are consuming this content. They're watching the same content, they're absorbing the same thing, but they're interacting with someone who is in their space. That was a really important and effective, and it was a great learning for us too, which, you know, sometimes just those small pieces added to it can make a huge difference.
Absolutely. It sounds like your organization is nailing it, because that to me is the definition of hybrid. It's two things happening at the same time, and versus we've got in-person and then a digital experience and very separate. And it sounds exciting that you're forming new paths to make this happen, truly.
Yes, very absolutely. Exciting. And it's the future. It is going to, once you give optionality to audiences, as you know, they are very reluctant to give that optionality back up, so that, you know, when it is possible for me to consume the content that I really want, but it's not possible for me to fly there this time, I want that option. And, you know, audiences want that too.
Wonderful. So speaking of boring, because you mentioned boring, and we don't have permission to be boring. And thank you so much. I might take that as the new tagline for my company. So, you know, we are the Ovation is the speaker trainers, and I'm a little obsessed with speakers and training and all that stuff. Do you have any fun, maybe speaker stories you might be willing to share?
And by fun, maybe a struggle.
Maybe a little bit of a struggle. Yeah.
And I think we could say, you know, you tend to learn more from your failures than you do your successes. So we're going to lean into that.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, I think it had to do probably with what I would consider a fairly sort of early days of the adoption of virtual as a necessity. Yes, all of those words were chosen very specifically because now it is a strategy. But, you know, in the early days of virtual as a necessity, I think that there was, with some speakers, not necessarily the full appreciation of what's required, that you have to bring every bit of effort, if not more, to a virtual presentation than you would when you're in the room, because you've got the excitement of the room that immediately adds energy in. And so, you know, I would say that we had a virtual conference and we were really trying to help the speaker to understand that practicing is really important and even more so as it relates to virtual, because there are elements that you cannot control. The elements of technology, you just never know exactly what they're going to do. And in some of those early days, they were even more unpredictable. In fact, one of my sayings that is a favorite around here is I still never attended a perfect virtual because it doesn't exist. So we were interacting. The speaker was extremely convinced that I do this every day, which is a dangerous statement number one. It's just me sitting at my computer, which is dangerous statement number two. And I know this information like the back of my hand, which is dangerous statement number three. So when combined with all of those things, despite our urging, showed up and was in a completely unfamiliar element, engaging the audience in a completely unfamiliar way, and just really had not thought through and rehearsed what it would mean to deliver effective content in this. And so you ended up with someone who was like 15 minutes figuring out what was going on with the camera and the stuff. When we finally started, was unfamiliar with how we wanted to deliver the information. And in the end, ended up having a much more engaging conversation that happened in the chat around maybe the first bullet point that he made, to the point where it was sort of obvious that he was being ignored. Which was just a little uncomfortable for all of those who were a part of the planning. So, you know, I think being aware of what some of those dangerous assumptions are, and you know, you gotta practice, you gotta rehearse.
That story gave me hives and the stomach cramp, like all at the same time. There's so many things of like, oh no, I just want to help them. And maybe also. Possibly shake them by the shoulders. So okay, I loved the story. Also, I'm still recovering at the same time.
Yeah.
And you mentioned
I am too.
Yeah. Yes, I know the event space. It's a stressful place to be. It's up there in the top stressful jobs in the world. Yeah. So yeah, I can only imagine. And you mentioned it, so I think I know what you're going to say, but maybe the people don't, is what is the one thing you wished speakers did?
You know, since it's sort of a cop-out for me to say rehearsal, although it's still the one thing.
It's a pretty cool answer for me. Thank you. Okay.
It's necessary because without the first, without that answer, even the second one just wouldn't be effective, which is storytelling. Consider storytelling and just how important it is to build a story. Yes, you, generally speaking, have some sort of information as you sort of dissect it that you have to deliver as a speaker, but the how that you deliver it makes all the difference in the world. And a part of that is engaging with real human beings that are there. Because if you don't, then why did you not just print this in a report and send it? Because that is a delivery of information. The key component that makes this better and more exciting is the audience in the room. And so engage them. The best way to engage human beings is to tell stories. You can go trace that all the way back to our origin. So storytelling, consider storytelling, especially as you start your presentation, which you actually did today. I'm not impressed at all. How intentional. You know, it's there. You can read studies out there that are very scary to many speakers, which is that within your first minute, if you haven't engaged your audience's brain, you're in trouble. And that's not much time. But telling a story immediately lights that on fire and will draw them in. And it's because it's human being to human being. And that's what gets us going. And again, that's what you can only do when you're together, is to engage those human beings in a really authentic and specific way. So tell a story. Think about a story that's going to connect with this audience. And you know, consider that from, put yourself in the mindset of what their journey has been. And when you do that, you start to think about that and relate that to the information that you want to deliver, then a story tends to pop up and it'll get them. And then you're starting off on a really good foot.
Preach, Kevin Cobb, preach. That's all I have to say. That's, yes. Because you're right. In the first second, in the in-person stop, well, probably in virtual too, but you know, in person, and I've been in the back of the room of like thousands of speakers that if they don't grab them, guess what happens? This. And
yep, right,
since
here,
most people probably can't see me, is I picked up my phone and I buried my face in it. And that's correct. And that's what happens. Or you're digitally virtually attending and it's like swipe, and then there's a cat video that's much more interesting. Absolutely. Than what's happening.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Great. Ooh, so exciting. Hey, can we change lanes just a little?
Let's do it.
Just absolutely. A little, because I'm super fascinated that we had all the way back, because you have a degree in theater like me. I have musical theater, but you know, same, we're the same. And yet here you are having this big, profound space within the event industry. So how did that happen? How did we get from, I'm in a van driving across the country with things probably falling out on the highway, to here I am, I'm in Kansas City and I'm killing it. What's happening?
It has been a very, very interesting journey. And I think I would even probably scroll it back further, which is, you know, I'm from a really large family. I'm the eighth of nine kids. I have five sisters and three brothers. And we are a very large Irish family. And so, you know, I often say that conversation was a contact sport and still is in my family. And so this idea of being able to gain and hold attention, you know, I just grew up, I never knew anything different, but our mealtimes in particular were almost like an event in and of themselves. You know, you get all those people around the table and you're sitting down and the conversation and the stories and the just the things that occur there, I think trained me to both love and be prepared for the event industry. So then, you know, scroll forward, theater was a natural interest to me as well. You know, I did that for quite some time. I also did get a degree in communication. So I have the BA theater, but also a Bachelor of Science around public relations, communication. I loved creative as well. So, you know, I did a whole bunch from a design standpoint, because I think what fascinates me is this idea of an intersection of many things. So, you know, for me, I've spent time doing almost everything in marketing, from really big brands at Hallmark, which is still one of the largest employers of creatives in our country, you know, to, you know, technology at an enterprise technology company. I was in the nonprofit space for a while. Worked actually for lawyers and for the American Bar Association, helping to serve the litigators too. And let me tell you what, until you've had to defend a marketing plan in front of a room of 18 of the top litigators in the country, you haven't lived. That's going to teach you many, many things. And so
having been raised by judges, I understand. I feel you it's right there.
Yes, ooh. Yes. Yeah, you're gonna bathe a little bit in fire out there. And so I had sort of, you know, this competing, not competing, but this, I think, complementary pieces of my passion, but also just interest of the intersection of strategy, creative, and marketing and storytelling. And, you know, as I navigated my way into the experience industry, it was sort of this aha moment where always I had a piece of this or a couple of pieces of this. You know, in the experience industry, the event industry, suddenly it was all the things. You've got the theatrics of, you know, you get one, you know, curtain goes up, you get one shot, right? And that's part of what drives anybody that's an actor, you know, the live audience, they're specifically using strategy to help grow or have someone feel a certain way and take actions, those things that are really cool about human interaction, you know, that exists here. But then, you know, that strategy piece, the technology piece, which is woven into all experiences now, if you want to hold people's attention as well, it just sort of, it all came together in this nice melting pot that tends to, I think, reflect who I am and my experience as well. So it was this journey from, you know, gyms full of 300 of kids to, you know, boardrooms with 18 litigators to, you know, the very early days of social media. And yes, I'm showing my age. And that's part of what pulled me also into marketing was social media was becoming this thing. And I'm continuing to be very interested in this idea of the voice of the audience and the person and having them have more say. And so here we are.
Here we are. I can't wait to see where you go. It's been so exciting since the beginning, the early days of social. I'm assuming that's when you got into Pinterest.
Yes, right, that's what absolutely. Yeah.
Wonderful. Wow. If only we had 3 hours, because there's so many things to just deep dive into. Thank you so much for sharing that. I really, really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Are you ready, Kevin Cobb? Also, I can't just stop saying your entire name because it's so satisfying to say. I hope you're okay with that.
Fully.
Okay, wonderful. Kevin Cobb, are you ready for our Lightning Express round?
Lightning Express round, let's do it.
All right, we're gonna put 45 seconds on the clock, and I'm using the biggest air quotes possible when I say that. I've got 7 questions on the board. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Excellent. Kevin Cobb, what is your favorite moment in the event process?
I think it's the moment right before you're about to go live. And I say that whether it's the walk on stage or you're about to hit broadcast on the virtual, because it does come with both. But it's that moment, that breath that we took at the beginning, right before going on and nailing it.
Yes. Who do you consider your mentor?
Oh my, I've had so many across the years. There was someone in particular who was connected to me at Hallmark, who she just shared so much wisdom about what it meant to be a leader and to protect your people. And so I'm terrible with names, and everybody who knows will tell you that. So, but I hold her still as my mentor.
Oh, wonderful. Please name all your siblings in birth order.
Birth order: Linda, Francis, Barbara, Michael, Peter, Patrick, Dorothy, me, and Janet.
Yes, nailed it. That's amazing. Yes. What do you do every day to stay healthy and sane?
You know, I really love to start the day with a walk outside. And this came from, I lived in Chicago for 6 years. And one of my favorite things was that I didn't own a car. And it was a 15 to 20 minute walk to the L and then riding downtown. And then we were ready to go. That was awesome. And so still starting the day, walking outside whenever possible and getting that fresh air, I think, is a big part of what keeps me sane.
Yes. Oh, understood. If you weren't talking to me right now, what would you be doing?
Most likely I would be on a call and we would be discussing strategy or technology or creative, something around that.
All right. This is the highest stakes question I have to ask you. Is Arthur Bryant's the best barbecue in Kansas City?
Oh my gosh, are you trying to start a war? You can't just throw that in there.
Yes.
So Arthur Bryant's is very good. And what any good Kansas City barbecue fan will tell you, it depends on what you want to eat that day. So if it's ribs, that's going to be some, you know, one place. If it's burnt ends, or if it's more like your brisket, that's probably going to be somewhere else. If you're looking for like a really good smoked chicken, or you want to get into even like some of the places that have great smoked turkey, we're going to navigate you somewhere else. So we're going to really get down to what is your entree before we even direct you to a specific barbecue joint.
This sounds very similar to your event process, right? What's the audience? Where are we going? Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. I love barbecue, and I tried so many of them in my brief time in Kansas City. Okay, moving on. We'll go out when I'm there, right?
Fantastic.
Last question. We mentioned it. Being event professionals, very stressful. What is the best way we can care for our event professionals in our life, especially after the past couple of years?
Yes. And boy, no more of a relevant question than that. You know, I think it is to recognize that what all of us went through over the last 2 years was psychologically a little bit like, you know, a traumatic experience. And so allowing people to know that it's okay to have some days when you're not okay. And, you know, I think anything where it's so stressful anyway, but that it's also so exciting, which is also, you know, a part of that is this acceptance that because those things are combined, you're going to have days when you're just not okay. And when you've gone through what we've all gone through, and then that sort of just the added psychological impact of not really feeling safe as a human being for a while, you're gonna have days that you're just not okay, and that it's okay to be that, and to say that, and for all of us to then create space and understanding around someone when they're like, you know what, today I'm just not okay.
Thank you for that. You have made it through the not so lightning express round.
Oh, not so late. Yes, if we truly had 45 seconds, I'm only gonna make it through one question probably. I mean, you've heard my answer.
That's what I most look forward to. So it was good. And then I love that I could throw in the sibling thing at the end, because I didn't know that before we just talked just now. So thank you for that. Thank you for willing to jump in. Where, Kevin Cobb, can people find you if they want to connect with you? And I think they should.
They can find me, you know, my email address is kcobb@agiomarketing.com. That's a great way. I am also, you know, on LinkedIn, checking out LinkedIn like every day. You can find me there as well. You
Pinterest? Do you want to throw that?
I do still have Pinterest, and I'm going to embrace that.
Friendster?
And, you know, Friendster. Yeah, so, yes, I had a MySpace, everyone.
So did I. I did too. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I did too.
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't tweet a whole lot. And if I do, it's probably about football or barbecue or something like that. So, but I am Kevin J. Cobb on Twitter.
Football? Who's your team? Is it Chiefs, right? Is that the team?
Yes. So the Chiefs, which has been extremely exciting. And then actually on the NFC side, because I think you should always have at least two teams. I've been a 49ers fan since I was very, very young. And that came from, you know, we grew up out in the country on a farm. And one of the only channels that we could get on Saturdays played Notre Dame football. And one of the biggest Notre Dame quarterbacks would be Joe Montana, which brought me to the San Francisco 49ers, who I've been a fan of also for the rest of the time. And then, you know, Chiefs is the local team. There's nothing like a game at Arrowhead.
Amazing. Still, we're at the end and I'm still learning and getting surprises from you. What a gift. Thank you so much, Kevin Cobb. I appreciate your time and your expertise, and your massive amount of knowledge about everything. And thank you to our listeners. If you like events, if you love events, if you loathe events, tell someone about this podcast. No one loathes events, do they? I don't think so.
And
Right, exactly. Why would you? There's so much to experience. And as always, whatever you speak about, remember to be speaking of events. Thank you so much, Kevin Cobb. I appreciate it. And have a fantastic day. Are you getting barbecue for lunch?
You know, I'm thinking about it now because you planted it in my head. Yeah, so
me too. Me too.
I have a lot of places I could walk to. Thanks so much for having me. This was a lot of fun.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Thank you.
Speaking of events is sponsored by Ovation, the gold standard for professional presence and speaker development training, helping everyone get prepared, get confident, and get ovationed.